Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
The Italians have a new tourism slogan, Italy. A lot of good things to see.
Russ Dellinger.
The Pac-12 cannot catch a break because the big story at Pac-12 Media Day, if it wasn't going to be the TV deal, it was going to be Coach Prime. And now he's not going to be there. That is a crushing blow.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Got a lot for a little, and that was the draw of hams. We drank a fair amount of hams. I don't remember whether I burped more than usual or not, but I've done some time with hams.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. It is Wednesday late here at SEC Media Days. We're taping this episode. We're getting into a whole bunch of stuff briefly. Thanks to everyone who came out Monday night to the meetup. We had a small group early. More people kept coming. Tootsie's probably not the best place for a meetup. It's a good place you want to hear cover bands. But hey, beers were had. And someone was charging me $9 for a bottle of Busch Light. I thought I was like, what's up, Tootsies? Come on now.
A lot of beers were had.
Someone bought us around. There's a lot happened. It was great. Yeah. Fun time. Yeah. It was great to meet the guys, all that. So,
Thanks to everyone who came.
It was a great night out. I apparently was not as great as Nick Saban's Italian holiday. We were graced by the king today, Nick Saban. And I got to say, this is we'll get to what the Tide's going to do at quarterback. He tells a story today. And we know how maniacal he is. We know that he does not like to not work. But he and Miss Terry were married in December of 1971, which means 2 years ago was his 50th wedding anniversary. And some friends of his, of theirs, probably more friends of Miss Terry than him, bought them a vacation to Italy to celebrate as a gift for the 50th anniversary. Very nice gift. And he didn't go. He wouldn't go until this summer. Okay? He says, I think you all know we went on a vacation in Italy. Just to clear that up, it was our 50th wedding anniversary gift to Miss Terry from some of our friends, which I successfully got out of for 2 years. Failed to be able to get out of it this year. Didn't really want to go. Okay, now I'm going to get to how his trip, because this is just great. Nick Saban does Italy. Could have been a three-part Hulu doc. But at least SEC stories or something. We're all married. If your wife gets a gift to go to it, how do you successfully get out of it? Even if, why would you want to, A? But yeah. B, how, you're on that plane. Your ass is on that plane. Nick Saban. What? Ross, can you get out of a trip to Italy?
Well, I had a scheduled trip to Italy, and the thing that got me out of it was this thing called COVID-19 back in March of 2020. Had a whole trip booked to
Italy. Shut the country down. Okay, they shut the country down.
They did. Yes, that's right. That's right. They wouldn't let me in. They wouldn't let me in. Went to Hawaii instead, which was a good backup plan.
Okay. But you still went on vacation. Pat, I mean, what is this? What is this? This is a serious marital flex by Nick Saban.
Yeah. We got a free trip to a great place. I ain't going. Unbelievable that he managed to do it for 2 years to put it off. And, you know, I would hate the inconvenience of having somebody pay for me to take a trip to Italy. What a terrible thing to have happen. He did. It was. I liked too that he recommended that everybody should go to Italy.
Oh yeah. Yes. I'll get to this. So he didn't. I failed to be able to get out of it this year. Like, he was down about, I think Miss Terry's going to have a word with him tonight.
I think so.
I think there's going to be a word. I think there's going to be a word or two.
At the lake house, they're on the way. They're on the way to their lake house in Georgia for a few days and to celebrate his mother's birthday. It's like 92 or 93. And Miss Terry, they might have some words at the lake. Huh?
Yeah. What is this? Bragging that you successfully got out, failed to be able to. So losing streak. He doesn't lose many games, but he lost this one, I guess. He's 2-1 on the Italy trip. Two wins, one loss. Okay, why did he not want to go? I mean, like, the guy will go to the end of the earth if it's like, you just got to tell him there's an edge rusher behind the Spanish steps, and he'll, like. Okay, yes. So then he tells us, but it was a fabulous time, fabulous, and I would recommend anybody do it. Like, and the way he was saying was kind of like he was cluing us in on this little secret. Like, you know, like Pat, you was like, hey, downtown Columbus, Georgia is kind of cool. You probably don't ever heard of it. Or this really good barbecue in this, like, yes, Italy. Who ever heard of Italy?
Who knew? Yeah. Vacation spot? Really?
He says lots of good culture, great architecture, art. A lot of good things to see. The Italians have a new tourism slogan. Italy, a lot of good things to see.
Good old things.
What in the world was he doing? I have so many questions about this trip now. They went to a Ferrari plant and they were getting yelled Roll Tide. And he said, these cats don't even speak English and we're getting Roll Tide.
Yeah, I mean, like, Nick Saban is the first person on earth who would ever, like, prefer to be back in his office studying film than going to Italy. Which is, I guess, one of the reasons he's Nick Saban. But still, come on, man. You got to live a little. You're 71 years old. Break down and take the Italian trip and enjoy it. I'm glad he did at least enjoy it once he got there.
At least he did that. He didn't grump. He didn't appear to be grumpy. I mean, a lot of good culture, great architecture, art, a lot of good things to see. So why wouldn't you? Obviously, you're going to have a good time. You got to figure, like, he probably gets like 6 weeks vacation, month vacation. I don't know what your average Alabama employee gets per year, maybe a month. I mean, 16 years, he's been there. He undoubtedly has used none of it until now. Right. Maybe a personal day or two over at the lake. Uh-huh. But he's got a lot of built up vacay.
Yeah.
Anyway.
16 years of 6 weeks a year, yeah. He could take an entire season, a year off if he wanted to.
In less pertinent matters, he did not name a quarterback. He says he told a story of his grandma making cakes. He was very folksy this week, and we didn't even get to Sam Pittman. We'll get to him next.
Oh, yes, we will.
Coach Nick was folksy. Should this be a cause of concern that we're going to let the cake bake with the quarterbacks?
No, I mean, it's the smart thing to do. I mean, is there concern? Yes, because I don't think their quarterbacks are very good. But letting it play out through August, I don't think is a major issue. You know, Jalen Milroe played the most last year. He was the first guy off the bench when Bryce Young was hurt a couple times. And he was okay. He ran better than he threw. He had too many turnovers for a guy that didn't play very much. He had 5 combined interceptions, fumbles. And then, you know, you got Ty Simpson, who was a freshman last year, who's thrown a total of 5 passes as collegian. And then you have Tyler Buckner, transferred in from Notre Dame, and who was just kind of a functional guy at Notre Dame. So, again, I don't think the options are tremendous there. So, yes, I would let it play out probably all the way till the end of August before I decided who I really wanted to play if I were Alabama.
Grandma Saban would be proud, right? She has her cakes, and she told little Nick that if she takes the cake out too early, it's going to be mush, little Nick. It's going to be mushy. He would stand in front of the oven waiting and begging Grandma. So Grandma would be proud that little Nick, now big Nick, is going to wait. It makes sense, like Pat said, obviously. I would imagine that Nick Saban would like to have a starting quarterback named right now and as soon as possible. But, you know, he's got, three guys and one brand new competing. And so, heck, you know, it might take into the season. You never know. We've seen that from coaches recently. We saw that from Lane Kiffin. We saw that from Jim Harbaugh. You know, is it the quarterback competition kind of extends into the end of the season? Alabama probably should have a quarterback by should not extend it too long. Week two is a game against Texas. But they begin in Tennessee, and so you would think they'd learn a lot and maybe be able to rotate quarterbacks if they need to in that opener.
Yeah, Michigan last year had like four easy games.
Didn't have Texas, no.
Yeah, didn't have any Texas waiting, and he had time and definitely handled that. Yeah, so we'll see what they do with QB. They've got a lot of players. They've recruited very, very well. They don't have a ton of experience. He notes it's because his guys leave for the NFL, which he's quite happy they do, and all that. So I don't know. It's going to be an interesting season. They lost two games last year. They're on the last play. And the quarterback, it's a little unusual of late, but it was like for a long time, even under Saban, they didn't have great quarterbacks.
Right.
No offense to AJ and Greg McElroy and all these guys, but they were more, you know, they were NFL quarterbacks, but backups, right? And then all of a sudden, it's Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, Mac Jones, and then Bryce Young, I think, was the best of them at the college level. But all great. I mean, one-eighth of the NFL is going to have an Alabama starter, right? Starting Alabama quarterback, or, you know, we'll let Oklahoma and Alabama fight over the Jalen Hurts, who claims Jalen Hurts, but whatever. And now it's that little bit of uncertainty. We just aren't used to that uncertainty for a while, or the uncertainty was like, we got two great ones, so what are we going to do? I wanted to ask this, though. We had Georgia come through, too, on yesterday, looking for the three-peat. Very confident Kirby Smart. Very, very confident players. There's been no three-peat since the 30s with Minnesota.
Even that's a little sketch. Like, two of them were before there was an AP poll. Yeah.
So. Even the AP, I don't really count these, but whatever. It happened. And then this is it. And so, you know, this is the first time. I guess what I'm trying to say is Saban's been there 16 years. He's dominated the SEC. He's dominated college football. That doesn't mean he won every single game. Teams stepped up. To A&M beats him once, and Ole Miss beats him a couple times. South Carolina, different teams have beaten him. Auburn, I think, has won five of them. And other teams have won national titles. LSU, Auburn during one of them, you know, whatever. But I don't feel like at any point a program had risen up where they could say, we're as good, if not better than you, right? Except now with Kirby Smart in Georgia. And the players were asked about it today. Do they think Georgia's passed them by? They did not agree with that, but they certainly respect that they've won two in a row. But is it fair to say Georgia is a better program right now than Alabama, or equal, or and does that matter at all in what Saban's trying to do? Pat, I'll start with you.
Yeah, sure. It's not just fair, it's accurate. Georgia is a better program right now. I mean, there are the back-to-back national champions. They will probably start this season number one. They could well finish this season number one. They beat Alabama head-to-head on the field for the national championship 2 years ago. I think they would have beaten them last year if they'd played them, and probably beaten them handily. So, I think there's no doubt about it, and I've said before, I'll say again, I think that Nick Saban's window of dominance is closing in the SEC. It's perhaps even closed. Now, we'll see. They signed this just ridiculous class that's freshmen right now. So maybe in a couple years when those guys, if they keep the class together and they all are as good as advertised, that maybe Alabama once again has the best talent in the country. But right now, that belongs to Georgia. Georgia's more talented, better coached, and has accomplished more. So I say the time for Nick Saban, we have to see. That I think this is a fairly critical year for him to regain some of what I think is a little bit of lost luster.
Put it on the Sean, put it on the link headline, 40 doubles down, dynasty over at Alabama. Just dangerous. Asking for it. You know, I think there was a couple coaches that I want to say, I can't remember if it was Dana Hogerson or Sonny Dykes at Big 12 Media Day. Pat, you were there. You might remember. Somebody, though, talked about comparing Alabama and Georgia, and the quote was something to the effect of, Georgia, that's a whole nother deal there, going on there. Like, acting like they are far and away the best program in the country. And, I wish I could remember who it was, but it was a coach who said that, and that kind of opened my eyes a little bit. I knew that Georgia has recruited, obviously, significantly well and won the last two national championships. So, obviously, they're doing a lot of great things. I didn't know that they were some of the quotes from some of these coaches, when you talk about Georgia, they do act like Georgia's head and shoulders above everybody, including Alabama. And I think it starts on the defensive front. That's where it seems to start. You know, Alabama dominated for so many years, mainly because of a just nasty defensive front and defense in general. And we have seen Alabama's defensive front kind of drop off a little bit. And we've seen Georgia's go the other way, right, just rise up. And there was a quote when I met with Hugh Freeze, the Auburn coach, in the spring. There was a quote in the story, and again, I can't remember it verbatim, but he basically made note of that. He basically said that the defensive front in Alabama isn't what it used to be, and the defensive front of Georgia is just, you know, the best he and so many other coaches have ever seen, basically.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that they're not. I don't know how quite you rank it, but this will be a very important season. I mean, if Georgia goes on and wins a third and Bama ends up with two losses again, and I understand the absurdity of talking about two losses being like a disaster, but this is the standard he set. I think the other issue is you got a 45-year-old guy, a 47-year-old coach with, you know, just so much energy and polish and the system's working. Kirby said, their number one enemy is complacency, and they're doing everything they can to not be complacent. And acknowledging it is the key. I also wonder on this year with Georgia, like, you kind of need some luck to win the national title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ohio State hits the field goal, they don't win the national title. You need a lot to go right to go 15-0 and win national championships. And almost by no fault of their own, is that where this breaks up? Is the chemistry of the locker room not much? Do we underappreciate Stetson Bennett? I'm sure I have. But did he bring something else? Like, I don't know. He got the last laugh on me. He got the last laugh. But I got a degree, and it didn't take 6 years. So I got that.
Ooh.
Got everything
Cold.
Else.
Dan off the top rope.
6 years with no degree.
He can't be a law firm if he can't even get an undergraduate degree.
Yeah, he's going to have to do some work on getting to the law firm. Also, wanted to mention with Georgia, one of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution stories about the football program dealt with how the program handles sexual abuse allegations. And there was a lot of pushback. We talked about the pushback from Georgia and the Kirby and the administration on that. This is not the speeding and reckless driving things, but it's a different story the AJC did. And the AJC on Wednesday came out and issued corrections to their story. And not only that, fired the lead reporter on the story, Alan Judd, which is, you know, pretty rare to see something that significant, and said, we identified errors that fell short of our standards and we corrected them. So they could not. The basic premise of the thing was 11 players remained with the team after women reported violent encounters, and they could not come up with the precise count of 11. And so they adjusted several paragraphs of the story. You want to go read it? I'm sure it's up on their website. But we discussed it. So
not shocking. Yeah, I mean, you don't, like Dan said, you don't see a newspaper firing reporters very often. That does not happen. And it was pretty startling to see. You know, Georgia, as you mentioned, Georgia administratively in down to Coach Kirby Smart have been kind of pushing back on the story, even going beyond just the letter it sent to the AJC last week. But they've been pushing back, you know, privately with a lot of people in the media and beyond about that this was not completely accurate reporting. And the AJC, I guess, went back and did. I get kudos to them, you know, for going back and investigating their administration and investigating stuff and getting it corrected. But yeah, fairly startling and shocking, you know, to see a journalist fired. But I guess it's a lesson for all of us in general. I mean, accuracy is at a premium, especially with things that are so serious as these matters and so sensitive as these matters.
Yeah, that's not a lesson you need to be reminded of. I mean, Jesus.
It shouldn't be. Like, you know, yeah, that's a fireable offense for Alan Judd there. And, yeah, I had mentioned him when we talked about this, that you really don't want Alan Judd poking into your stuff because he's a dogged reporter. But you got to be accurate and you got to be fair. And I was reminded – I had forgotten almost all of the episode, but he resigned at the Courier-Journal when I worked with him there in the 1980s, and I talked to some people who worked with him then when I was driving down here to SEC Media Day, because I figured this stuff might come up. I said, hey, can you please kind of refresh my memory? And they're like, yeah, it was bad. It was bad. So this is now two significant episodes that Alan Judd has had, and I don't blame Georgia for firing back on that. I do think there has been an element of kind of almost trying to change the subject from some of the driving stuff. But, you know, if you make an error, you open yourself up to intense criticism, and the AJC is getting it.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, we got to hear from a couple more SEC stories before we get to Northwestern and others. Got to hear from the great Sam Pittman today. Easily, just a blast. Just I don't even know what he was talking about half the time. I'm not sure he did. At one point, he got asked because he grew up in Oklahoma, and the reporter said, "Hey, I'm from the Tulsa World," and he said, "Can you tell me your earliest Oklahoma football memories? Because you were an Oklahoma fan as a kid." And he goes, and he answers, I don't know whether you can hear or what. He's like, "My first memory of the Tulsa World was in 1971. I made the Tulsa World All-State team." Like, the memory of the Tulsa World. He talked about that. He's very excited about the guy, Oklahoma, coming. I think it's going to be really great for Arkansas to have that. He thought there's a whole bunch of stuff. Someone randomly asked him about, does he like drinking Ham's beer?
That was one of the strangest moments in SEC Hams? Media Day's history.
Yeah, was that a...
I don't know. You know, the guy said, well, you know, coach, you know, after a game one time you were interviewed and you said you'd really like a beer. And so I'm just wondering if after a game you've had yourself a Ham's beer. And I'm like, what? That's really the question?
This is the question.
Answer.
You famously said coming off the field after a big Razorback win one time, how you were going to celebrate and, quote, "I think I'm going to go home and have me a cold beer," end quote. Would that ever include a Ham's beer?
Was this like I haven't even heard of that. Oh. I haven't even ever heard of that brand of beer.
Is that an NIL deal with the reporter?
You haven't lived, Ross. Come on.
I guess not. I'm Googling it right now. Hams beer.
It's
wow,
an old
look at
beer.
That can.
It's an old Minnesota
Holy
beer.
Holy cow. First brewed in 1865. Wow.
Yeah, it's not even like an Arkansas beer or something. I didn't understand.
Like it makes a total non sequitur.
Bizarre.
This random old school
really weird.
Cheap yeah. beer. And he said, I like ham beer, but it makes you burp. This is what was going on. If you want to know what Media Day is like, this is the crap yeah. we're doing. Like Nick Saban talking about Italy. Like, it's time to start the season. Let's go.
Yeah, right. I like an old ham's beer, but you burp a lot afterwards. And then I believe this was a comment to the reporter about how he needs better beer taste. He said, you seem like you got a good job, man. Step it up a bit.
Yes.
Hams, I will tell you this. Now, hams back in the day when I was growing up was like $2.99 a 12-pack. So you got a lot for a little, and that was the draw of hams. We drank a fair amount of hams. I don't remember whether I burped more than usual or not, but I've done some time with hams.
You know Sam Pittman, he wouldn't be wrong. Burp to beer ratio.
I'm now reading about hams beer. I love that. I didn't know this either, that Minnesota was called the land of sky blue waters. Yes. Oh. First brewed in 1865 in Minnesota, the land of sky blue waters. Hams uses the purest water and the choicest barley malt grain in hops. And hey, their little mascot is the Hams Bear. Which kind of looks like the Scooby-Doo a little bit, but moving on. Sorry.
$2.99 a 12 back in the day, baby. Hard to beat.
All right, one more. Mississippi State, Zach Arnett, new head coach, taking over for Mike Leach. Challenge, like you got a tragic situation. You got grief. He's 36 years old, shifting gears, trying to get this thing going. I thought he was really impressive when he talked. I don't know what that'll get you, but certainly loves Mississippi State and's got a lot of energy. And I thought he was really impressive in his media day. And Ross, what do you think, Zach Arnett?
Yeah,
and the Bulldogs, can he maintain this like kind of run of success they've had, especially when Oklahoma and Texas jump in and make this even harder?
Yeah, I mean the schedule doesn't get too much easier for Mississippi State going forward. Although they do dodge Alabama in 2024, which ends like this streak of playing Alabama, you know, 100 years in a row or whatever. But yeah, it's going to be a challenge. And the Mississippi State job has been a challenge for decades. And Dan Mullen did things at Mississippi State that, literally no other coach did. He really raised expectations, and they had Joe Moorhead for a couple of years, just didn't quite work. And then obviously Leach the last few years seemed like he was building the program to this year, and if you looked at Mike Leach's previous teams, it's usually he builds like the old fashioned way at Tech. This is the case at Washington State. It wasn't till that third, fourth, maybe even fifth year where you had that big breakout season where he was able to get all the offensive pieces he needed for the air raid and get them in and get a good solid defense. And this felt like this was going to be the year, right? Will Rogers at quarterback. He's returning and very seasoned and really athletic kid. You want, Jack Arnett, I visited him over the spring. And I think at some point I asked him, so y'all going to like run the ball more? And he kind of laughed and he's like, well, we can't run the ball less. Like we can't run the ball less than Mike did. So yes, we're going to run the ball more. So it's going to be interesting to see the evolution of this kind of air raid under Zach Arnett, who is a defensive guy, right? Who will have his hands all over Mississippi State's defense, where they promoted from within at defensive coordinator. And then at offensive coordinator, they actually went out and made it a pretty interesting hire of Kevin Barbe, came over from, I think, App State. So, you know, they're going to keep a lot of pieces of the air raid, I think, but they're going to try to run the ball. They're going to try to run the ball more, be a little bit more maybe physical. But you got to let Will Rogers cook. He's incredibly talented. But one thing about Arnett and Leach, you know, is they are drastically different people. Now, that's not saying a whole lot, right? Because nobody was quite like Mike Leach. No coach certainly was quite like Mike Leach. But Zach, you know, he was really comfortable this week. And that was a comfort level that I didn't necessarily see, you know, just a few months ago. So he's starting to grow into it, it feels like.
Young coach.
37. Yeah, 37 maybe. 36, I think he's 36. 36. Yeah, the youngest coach, yeah, in the league. The SEC. And then the youngest coach in the SEC since the 80s in the SEC, I believe. LSU had somebody, the name is blanking me, who was 35 maybe or the same age as Arnett. But I think he might be like the second youngest coach ever in the SEC.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, the young coach better have them ready early because their September schedule, like, all right, they open with Southeastern Louisiana, win that one. But then the second game, really an interesting one, Arizona at Mississippi State. Arizona's a program, feels like they're getting better. And, like, that's one, if you're Zach Arnett, you sure want to win because after that, September 16th, LSU. September 23rd at South Carolina. September 30th, Alabama. Congratulations. Oof. I mean, yeah.
Welcome. Yeah. Welcome. There you go. This is what you wanted now. Anyway, he sounded good. I think he definitely understands the program and the blue collar nature of that program and what you got to do. And we'll see. But it's, never easy in that league. All right, let's switch to Pac-12 right now. Pac-12 Media Days later this week. They have, Ross, you did a story on still no TV deal. Next week will be TV week or whatever. The gas station TV deal has not come through. Nothing's come through. I mean, I can keep milking the joke. I don't know if they're doing it for me. Meanwhile, San Diego State is now back in the Mountain West, at least for now. That little romance is back. We're never, ever getting back together. But then maybe they are. So we got that. And then we have other news. And Coach Prime is having surgery Thursday. And it's not going to be able to make media day. And that's concerning for his health and his ability to continue living a life and coaching. And, you know, in one of the more anticipated seasons is how, you know, he's got these circulation issues in his legs and things like that. So a lot going on there. But what's the status with the TV deal?
Yeah, a lot going on out west right now. We break down all these things. So there's the news is there's no news with the Pac-12. There will be no announcement this week for a Pac-12 television deal. And yes, Dan, George Klavkoff and his staff are delaying the TV announcement just for your pleasure and in your content. That's exactly what they're doing. Now, I think This has been a long process, a year. They've been negotiating with TV partners for a year. I think Pac-12 officials believe that the longer they're waiting, the more potential suitors they're having involved. Now, again, you can believe that or you don't have to believe that because there a lot of them aren't necessarily saying it on the record, but that's what their belief, and they're confident they can get a deal that's going to be comparable to the Big 12's deal, which is important since the Big 12 was after a few of their teams, namely Colorado. So the thought is that before the football season kicks off, they will have a deal, early to mid-August or so that they'll have a deal. But it won't be this week, and I think they wanted to kind of get ahead of the story Friday, I would assume. That's what it kind of felt like, and so that the story on Friday at Media Day, it's Media Day in Las Vegas, is not will the Pac-12 announce a TV deal or not. You know, this in a way now everybody knows. Nope, it's not. You know, it's not happening. However, the Pac-12 cannot catch a break because the big story at Pac-12 Media Day, if it wasn't going to be the TV deal, it was going to be Coach Prime. and now he's not going to be there. That is a crushing blow for the league.
Yeah, it is. Could you please say Coach Prime's first name for me?
Dion.
There we go. I mean, there's no doubt that he was going to be the big draw at this. And so we certainly hope his health cooperates and he's able to, you know, have a full season and, you know, live the active kind of life you would like to see him live. But boy, it hurts Pac-12 media day. And you do have to wonder, you know, what's his level of fitness and activity going to be for practices in August, because practice starting soon here for Colorado, and they start with a huge game against TCU. So, and then they have Nebraska after that. So we'll see where that goes. But yeah, as far as the TV contract, man, you know, I mean, it's just like, someone just please tell us when it's over. So, you know, let me know when I need to go fill up on Pump 6 and flip on Arizona State against Oregon State or whatever.
Yeah, the story's getting – go ahead.
No, I was going to – no, go ahead, Dan, because I wanted to get back to address the San Diego State stuff, but
Oh, yeah. No, I was just saying the story's boring, but go to the San Diego stuff. Yeah. I'm tired of TV deals.
Yeah, the San Diego State stuff is a little less boring. What a drama that has been this summer. You know, it was a back-and-forth letter exchange between San Diego State and the Mountain West that started with San Diego State sending a letter to the Mountain West mid to late June, saying that they had the intention to withdraw from the league and asking the league if they would push back the June 30th date and give them some, you know, relax the exit fee if they were to leave. And the Mountain West took that as a formal withdrawal. And then that created this whole cluster where it was a back and forth letter exchange. Finally, the Mountain West, what happened yesterday, the Mountain West agreed in a letter, another letter to San Diego State, that they will remain a member of the league, at least, you know, for the next couple years, unless it wants to pay a huge buyout. But they'll have to pay, San Diego State will have to pay legal fees, billable hours for the Mountain West's legal work through this whole process. Really was, all of this seems like it could have been avoided if people were to have just gotten on the phone or in person with each other instead of going back and forth with this letter exchange that resulted in kind of a miscommunication.
I don't know what they were trying. Well, I know what they were trying to do, but it didn't work out. They're getting strung along by the TV deal. I think we're bored of the TV deal. San Diego State's really bored with it. But anyway, we like missteps and disasters. Speaking of lawyers, though, and missteps and disasters. Every law firm in Chicago is now employed on the Northwestern case. There are going to be the school announced two new reviews. I don't know how that works, but there are two separate reviews into the hazing allegations. There are now two separate lawsuits from players, different groups of players. And then there's Pat Fitzgerald suing Northwestern. One of the new filings, they're suing everybody, including all the trustees, the president, current AD Derek Gragg, Fitzgerald, former president Morton Shapiro, and former AD Jim Phillips, who's now the ACC commissioner. A number of players stepped forward at a press conference the other day. Warren Miles Long, a running back, starting in 2013, this is from an ESPN article, said the culture of sexual violence and hazing was, quote, rampant. Lloyd Yates, a quarterback from 15 to 17, said, "I find it hard to believe coaches were not aware of what was taking place. A lot of coaches took part in it, in many different manners. And explicit behavior was so explicit. It was loud, took place in close proximity where the staff trainers were located. It's kind of hard to take a blind eye." Coach Fitz's attorney shot back and said, "There's still nobody has any allegation that, you know, proves he knew anything was going on." And then there's talk of this moving into We had the baseball coach fired. He's talking moving into other programs at Northwestern. Like, this is snowballing into an absolute monster problem across the board at the Northwestern Athletic Department. Pat, it's hard to keep up. I don't even know how to. Right. There's about seven. I got like eight articles. Like, there's so much. I don't even know how to. There's a lot. They got issues.
Oh yeah, they got, and that's like, it really does feel like we're still there. There's going to be a lot of threads to pull on this thing for quite a while. The deeper we get into this, and the more athletes you hear from, and stories that are told or whatever, but like, everyone is under the microscope that had anything to do with Northwestern athletics in the last decade plus, and that does prominently include Jim Phillips, who now will have this dropped on his plate at ACC Media Days next week. So that they will have concurrent storylines there. We'll have Northwestern at Big Ten Media Days and Jim Phillips at ACC Media Days, both getting asked about what the hell has been going on at Northwestern. So it's going to be, it's already ugly. It's going to be uglier. We'll see who else ends up losing jobs over it, but it's a nasty situation for sure.
It seems like it'll be unspooled for a while, and even maybe, you know, right, go well beyond football. You know, I saw the lawyers mention other sports, and more players continue to join in. And the one question, and I think we talked about this last pod, but there's a interesting question to be asked here, and it's, why was Pat Fitzgerald the only one fired? And everybody else on the staff, who obviously knew what was happening, kept their jobs. So as more things come out, I would think more people, like you said, Pat, are going to be in jeopardy of being fired.
Yeah, if you work at Northwestern, get a lawyer. This is going to be significant, and who knows? But I mean, they're talking. They got 12 plaintiffs. There's 50 more they're talking to. I mean, who knows? I still don't know how one guy gets fired, but not everybody else. They tried to thread a needle here that just never was going to work. And now they're dealing with something much bigger than probably they ever anticipated. One other thing I wanted to mention, we had a fun with the Tim Weiser, the deputy commissioner of the Big 12, chirping Texas and Oklahoma. I want to give credit. That interview was done on the KC Sports Network. Sports Network. We try to find whoever is really giving us this information, but sometimes it's hard. So the KC Sports information. And that one has been it's pretty interesting. There were the Texas and Oklahoma had reporters here at Media Day. It was pretty interesting how many questions were coming in from like the Austin American-Statesman and the Oklahoma newspapers and stuff gearing up for this this thing. Like, and they're going to move the Media Day to Dallas next year. And I just think this whole year is going to be, this is the year when you really get petty and angry at Texas and Oklahoma if you're in the Big 12, right?
Yeah, exactly. You really want to send them out in humble fashion. You don't want them winning the championship on their way out. So, but yeah, I mean, look, Texas's media relations guys were even here sitting with the media watching this whole thing unfold, you know, John Bianco and Thomas Stepp taking notes and figuring out what all they're getting into. They also had, they had people in Destin at spring meetings, as did Oklahoma. So you get the feeling that certainly in Texas part there, they're like just itching to go. Like, they can't wait, but you do have another year in your league first. And yes, I suspect you're correct, Dan, that the petty will be flowing through the Red River and elsewhere in the Big 12 this year.
No, I was going to say, I saw John Bianco in the hallway, the Texas Sports Information Director, one of the best in the country. And I don't just say that because he's an avid, I think, pod listener. So, John, thanks for listening. And yeah, I spotted him in the hallway and did a double take. Wait a second. Is Texas joined the league this year? Is they kicking off in 2023? But he was just scoping out the place and preparing for next year, where it'll be in his home state, in Texas, which we were talking, and we learned, or I learned, that The SEC Media Days will be taking place in Dallas next year at the same time that MLB All-Star Game is in Dallas at the same exact time. So get your hotel reservations now.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I did go up. I asked Bianco. I said, now, see, Big 12 Media Days ain't got no questions about Ham's beer. Okay? The SEC, its own animal.
I don't know. All animal?
Its own animal.
Its own animal. I don't know. They get some dumb questions at all of these. I believe there's dumb questions.
Yeah, I was at Big 12 Media Day. There was no questions about Ham's beer.
Yeah. all right. We have a list here from Jim Weber, LostLetterman.com, college football's 2023 all-name team. Thought we could go over these. You want to try to guess the school? Mm-hmm. You want to try that?
Mm. Yeah. Give us a name and we'll try to guess the school.
Okay. We have quarterback, first team quarterback, General Booty.
Ah, yes.
Oklahoma. See. We know that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's clear.
We have a transfer portal kid, Dakoldest Crawford, no longer at Nebraska.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did Dakoldest go to a colder weather climb? You got Minnesota? No.
No, La Tech. La Tech. Ah, the coldest.
Okay.
And then there's the coldest. Then there's the realest Clark. The realest. You won't get this one. Defiance College.
Defiance. Okay.
Yep. We have Rowdy Beers.
Rowdy Tight Beers. End. Excellent name.
Very good. Perfect.
FIU.
You like
FIU?
FIU? Okay.
Yep.
That's an SEC name there, man.
Trying to not. Some of these I don't want to say. Tiger Shanks. Tiger Shanks. UNLV.
Please tell me he plays golf.
I know. Fish McWilliams.
Mm.
UAB. Defensive lineman.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yep. There's Duke linebacker Memorable Factor.
Wow.
This is scaring me because I hope these are all real. I'm just reading. Yeah. we had one guy who was here today, Alabama, Kool-Aid McKinstry.
McKinstry, yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Pat, you're Louisville, Storm Duck. Storm Duck's coming.
Yeah, Storm Duck, transfer from North Carolina to Louisville. Yeah. Pretty good DB at North Carolina. Yeah.
First team all D. I don't know why the honorable mention, Sam Houston State has Meatball Smith. That's a good defensive lineman.
Yeah, it is. I love it.
We
have tight end Rocky Beers. Is Rocky and Rowdy Beers brothers?
I got him.
I hope so.
He's at the Air Force.
Air Force.
Rocky
okay.
Beers. Yeah. Let's see here. I don't know. There's this. I mean, it's a great list here. Squirrel White.
Oh yeah, Squirrels at Tennessee, right?
Tennessee. Yep. UCF kicker Colton Boomer, of course.
That one's good. Yes. He was dropping bombs and kissing moms, or kicking bombs and kissing moms. Remember?
I think that was it. Yeah, that was his line.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Man, like his high school yearbook or something.
So his mom didn't his mom then comment on that? She wasn't too happy about it. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, you know. North Carolina, Power Eccles. It's a good linebacker.
Yeah.
Wyoming, Buck Coors. That is a serious Wyoming name right there.
It is. Yeah.
Buck Coors.
He'll be out calf roping on his days off.
Steel Chambers. Great. Mm-hmm. Ohio State Buckeye linebacker. San Diego State has New Zealand Williams.
Oh, my. Really?
Interesting.
Yeah.
He's named him New Zealand. I don't know if he is New Zealand or not. Goes on. It's a good list. If you want to find it, it's Lost Letterman are on it. Dude Person from Central. Dude Person. not Dude Perfect. Dude Person.
Yeah.
UT San Antonio has Pig Cage. Pig Cage. I'm so easily amused. I really don't have a whole lot. Yeah. So
if I have another kid, I might name him New Zealand. I kind of like that.
New Zealand 40?
Yeah, maybe New Mexico 40.
You could have done a lot of stuff with 40. I mean, you got.
Oh, I know. Trust me. I threatened to. I was vetoed by my wife on every.
Oh, really? What were on the line there? What were you thinking?
American top
North, 40. Oh, God.
Yeah. North Dallas. what else? There was Love Tennis. Love 40.
Love 40. That's right. Yeah.
I'm trying 40, to 40
could have been the 40-40 club.
Yeah. 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 No, there was potential there, and I was thwarted.
They were thwarted. Okay. All right. Any other thoughts from what we've heard this week? Any other schools that interest you from Southeastern Conference Media Day? I think we're too focused. I didn't plan out enough stuff. Didn't help.
Yeah. Well, I do think it was noteworthy that Nick Saban said his favorite cake is carrot cake, which
that's true.
I think a terrible choice and an indication that that there are no perfect people in the world. Nick Saban can't pick his cake, right?
I like carrot cake, but not my favorite. I wouldn't say it would be my favorite.
What happened in that little house in West Virginia? Like, just standing around with grandma. Yeah. Carrot cake.
Making carrot cake.
Yeah. I thought Little Debbie, though. Doesn't he eat the Little Debbies?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are chocolate, right? I don't think you can get a carrot cake flavored Little Debbie. Maybe you can. I don't know. I had some interest in talking to Billy Napier. He thinks that Florida's much further along, you know, at this point this year than last year, which you would hope they would be. They weren't very good last year, 6-7. But they are. They've got a lot of eggs in the Graham Mertz basket at quarterback. And Graham Mertz transferred from Wisconsin, played a lot of ball there. Never quite lived up to the billing. He was a big 4-star recruit, like one of the highest rated quarterback recruits Wisconsin had ever gotten. We'll see if he reboots and does well in Napier's system. They got a couple other guys too that are in the mix just in case Graham Mertz doesn't pan out. But I still think that that's going to be a bit of a slow build. Now next year, things start looking up. I think they are recruiting extremely well right now in Florida. And so they're putting together a really good signing class here for December. They may not all be ready to play right away next year, but I think the trajectory is up, but it's not steeply up for Florida. I think it's going to take a while. Year three, year four, we'll start seeing some more from Billy Napier's guys, I think.
Well, I worry about next year. When you've got the Miami, Florida State, and UCF non-conference schedule.
Woo, yeah.
And then the SEC schedule that, you know, this is my thing, is how much patience is there? What record is okay? You know, you could have a pretty good season and still struggle wins and losses wise when that's going to be the case next year. I'm fascinated by that. So also here we have one other updated on a story. The Las Vegas police issued a statement, very cryptic statement. Las Vegas Metropolitan Police can confirm a search warrant was served in Henderson, Nevada on July 17, 2023 as part of the ongoing Tupac Shakur homicide investigation.
What?
We will have no further comment at this time. Now,
Get Jim Mora on the line.
That's what we want to know. Did Jim Mora spill UConn head coach Jim Mora? Is he somehow, was information he may or may not have had leading to this? If you recall, last year, Rob Cassidy, who normally covers basketball recruiting, sent out a tweet saying, Najee Harris once told me that Jim Mora told him he knew who killed Tupac during a recruiting visit to UCLA. And I've never stopped thinking about that. So did Jim Mora know who killed Tupac? This would be incredible information. Obviously, Tupac was murdered famously in the Las Vegas Strip after like a Mike Tyson fight. Later, he was asked that question. The Athletic asked him what and this is the question, last question here. They were doing a Q&A with Jim Mora when he took over at UConn, and Mora said, they said, couple months back, someone claimed Najee Harris. This is why I love this sport. This is an actual question.
Jesus.
Last question. A couple months back, someone claimed Najee Harris said when you were recruiting him that you could tell him who killed Tupac. So I got to ask, who did it? Jim Mora's answer is, I have no idea where that came from. I certainly never said that. That would be exactly what you'd say if you did know, mm-hmm. and you were cooperating with the Las Vegas, right?
We know Metropolitan you
Police
Mora.
Have no Las Vegas Metropolitan Police have no comment also.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. clearly they were just doing a search warrant in Henderson.
Mm-hmm.
So are we closer to knowing what Jim Mora may or may not know?
Oh, yeah. I'm intrigued now. Dang, well, they're an independent. They don't even have like a conference media day, so we can't even go like
get an update.
More. Yeah.
Chris Vanini asked that question. Great journalism right there. easily the strangest. We have a lot of strange stories in this sport. A lot of strange stories. But that this one may be the number one ongoing saga we have. All right, that's the show here. We'll have more. Media days are heating up. I don't know. I actually thought we had more info. We had more stuff. But media days are heating up. It's going to be fun. We'll be back next week with whatever else happens. Pac-12, rest of the SEC here. If someone wants to gift me an Italian vacation, I will take it. I will not fight it. Podcast will gladly go to
me
Italy.
Too. Yeah, the whole podcast will
yeah,
go.
Yeah, let's
we'll
take
go.
The whole pod.
Yeah.
Come on.
We're not going to be bitter, right?
We did. We had one listener who was generous enough to buy us a round of drinks mm-hmm. Monday night, and I think that same guy would probably very much like to put us on the Amalfi Coast for a show.
Yeah.
I think that'd be good. Yeah.
Only a small upcharge from the drinks that he
bought.
It was a fabulous time. Fabulous. I would recommend anyone do it. Lots of good culture, great architecture, art. A lot of good things to see.
Put it on your billboards, Italy. A lot Nick of good things to see.
Nick Saban giving thumbs up to old Italy. Yep. In case you were on the fence about whether Italy was a good place to go. All right. We will. Thanks for subscribing, sharing us on social media. We will be back next week. Talk to you later.